You probably take steps to keep your possessions safe, whether it's locking your house and car to prevent theft or checking your credit report to make sure your identity hasn't been stolen. There are steps that you probably take, I'm sure regularly. These are the steps that you would take to stay safe. Not surprisingly, there are similar steps that you should take to make sure your computer system is also protected. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Always happy to have an expert come by to share his or her expertise. And today we're happy to welcome Jesse LeGrew with us. Jesse's a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Information Technology, we call it DOIT around here, focuses on desktop and laptop security projects. On campus, he can be found consulting on IT projects, helping faculty and staff resolve computer problems or repairing infected computers. And Jesse LeGrew, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And maybe you can join in. Maybe you have, as you listen to the show, as Jesse and I talk, I'm wondering if you have steps to keep your computer and your network secure. What do you do? Or maybe you have questions about how to do a better job. Maybe you haven't had a priority on computer security. But now that you're thinking that you probably should, what do I do? Those are kinds of questions you can ask, and a whole lot more, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Jesse, you specialize in computer security. What all does that cover?
So in this case, it covers most of the software that you have on the computer, making sure that data stays where you intend for it to stay. So, for example, you might have a document with restricted information of some sort. Maybe it's your social security number, but to make sure that you know where that data is, make sure that you protect it, and if not, delete it. And that's just one portion of it. And we use a lot of technologies to ensure that your data stays safe, that no one's using your computer for any kind of nefarious deed.
Yeah.
So making sure you have antivirus software, making sure you have a personal firewall. And also data theft is such an issue, especially if you have a lost or stolen laptop, that having technologies like encryption so that if somebody does find it, they won't be able to get the data. Or even if they could, maybe it would take 2,000 years of cracking, which in that case, no one probably cares at that point. So it's really protecting data, but, you know, the individual from, you know, a variety of issues. And usually data is one of the most important.
Yeah, it kind of boggles the mind. If your computer gets compromised, there are so many bad things that can happen.
Yep, and most people, people are concerned with identity theft, and they're concerned with a lot of other items. Being defamed in some way is also a concern. So if somebody gets access to your LinkedIn account, your Facebook account, or something else that you didn't intend, it allows them to masquerade as you and do things that, you know, they're putting a different perspective of you out there on the internet that people can potentially see for a very long time, if not forever.
Yeah.
And it can be very difficult to undo that.
What should you keep in mind when you are online? Well, you know, what are the basic never do's and then maybe do with caution and almost always safe?
Especially with social media and anything on the internet, always ask yourself, is it okay if the entire world reads this? Am I okay with that? But always rethinking and determining whether you really want to take an action can be very important, whether that's writing an email or doing something else. Because even though things are not public record, consider that it might come out in some way. So just being careful and at least double checking whether you really think sending that text is a good idea, sending that email is a good idea, or that one Facebook post isn't going to come back to get you at some point.
Yeah. And there's even things, you know, I see students, I have advised a lot of students, and we constantly talk with them about what you post, even your email address. You know, if it's shot in a beer, you know, dot whisk guy, oh, you know, whatever. You don't want those kinds of monikers, do you?
No. And, I mean, a lot of people use email addresses in fun. They created them when they were younger. And now they, you know, it's 10 to 20 years later, they're applying for a job. And the thought doesn't even come, should I not use this address? And I think that you can definitely see people who've grown up with technology and people who are very new to it, how that difference plays out. But some people have one email account, they use it forever. Some people have 10. I have one address for every single thing I need, which, you know, can complicate things, but yeah. People can take it to, you know, a very large extreme.
We have David from South Milwaukee on board. David, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you. I'm brand new to this computer business. I want to know what three things might I have to do in order to maintain security. It really scares me to use it. I think the internet is kind of the wild, wild west, looking at it from the outside. And so could you give me three tips on what I need to do, like what kind of a service I might need to employ, and or if there's one service that takes care of all security, that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Good questions, David.
Of course. David, might I ask, what kind of computer do you have? Do you have a Mac or a Windows computer?
I purchased a sale I thought I couldn't refuse. I've got a laptop, an ISIS laptop, and it's loaded with a Windows 8.1. I'm told that 8.1 has some security built into it, but I don't know if that's sufficient.
Okay.
And so... just looking at three top things is in terms of security, and most of these tools are built in, and they might not always be turned on. So one item that I like to look at right away is antivirus software. Windows Defender is something that's built into the latest Windows operating systems. That comes enabled, it's automatically updated, and you can use it for free. Generally, that will...
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep, it'll suit most of your needs. And, I mean, they improve the product with each release of the operating system, so it becomes better every year, every day when definitions come out. So there's some built-in protection there. You will also get notifications since it is a later version of Windows. You'll get little flag alerts in the lower right-hand corner of your screen stating, hey, you should be worried about this. So always keep an eye on those messages because it will warn you about antivirus and other items. So just to keep in mind. Second would be a personal firewall. So in this case, Windows 8.1 also comes with a built-in firewall that is enabled by default. So that should have you covered as well. If you did need to make any changes, normally Windows will prompt you, hey, I need to do something. Can you allow me to do this and get outside of the firewall? When you see those kind of messages, always review it and just think in the back of your head whether, you know, I was using Firefox, for example, and I got a message from Firefox saying that it wanted to do something. It's most likely something you wanted to do, but always double check just because sometimes things might be running in the background that would do something otherwise that you wouldn't want.
Mm-hmm.
Third, I would actually look at backups of your data just to make sure that if you have any kind of hardware failure, that you have your data secure and that you can always get back to it at some point. There are many different options for this. However, there is a built-in backup feature into Windows 8.1 as well. You can use that feature, and you can use an external hard drive. You can use optical media such as a DVD or CDs. You can use flash drives. There's a large variety of options that you can use. But if you do want to go the external hard drive route, it really just depends on how much data you have. A lot of those external hard drives also come with built-in software. They may have extra benefits that the Windows 8.1 software doesn't have, but it really depends on, you know, what your needs would be.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So backup, the third and final. There you go.
And is there an advantage to cable over using a non-cable internet provider service?
And that's a really good question, and it's something that I think just about everyone thinks probably every 6 months whether they want to change providers or not. So there can be. So we have a lot of options as far as satellite, DSL, cable. and each may have their own advantages, or you might be only able to get certain services in certain areas. So if you live out in the middle of nowhere, satellite might be your only option. So it just depends on your location. Technically, cable has the potential to be faster, but is more affected by the larger community using it at the same time. If you live in a very dense community, there could be times in which it is slower, but other times in which it is faster. DSL, you normally get a more consistent speed all the time. And this can change, you know, depending on what your actual contract or service is, but that's one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, very good.
Security-wise, there's no difference between the two?
Security-wise, they are the same. Depending on your provider, they might come with some security software, but you already have a lot of security software on your computer, and it's generally a good idea, if you do have security software, pick one of each type. So only have one antivirus program, only have one firewall. Otherwise, it complicates how the computer functions, and it could cause errors in the long run. But as far as security, either one would serve the same purpose.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at online and computer systems and security issues as well with our guest today, Jesse LeGrue of the Division of Information Technology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Getting some great advice on your computer from Jesse LeGrue. And you can join in. The number to call, we got one open line at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Jim in Bayfield County wonders if Microsoft Security Essentials offers enough virus protection for his Lenovo laptop with Windows 7. If not, is there a better free virus program that you'd recommend?
And Security Essentials should work in most cases. One thing to note when looking at any kind of antivirus or anti-malware program, there is not one product that serves 100% of everything that's out there. Anything that you have is definitely going to be better than having nothing. In this case, as long as Security Essentials is kept up to date, it's going to be a very good option for you. If you do ever upgrade to later versions of Windows, Windows Defender and other products are all also built in. But it is definitely adequate for your needs. And, you know, if there is ever any kind of issue, there are a lot of free programs out there. But I would definitely recommend keeping with the one you have.
All right. Let's go to Arlene in New Berlin next. Arlene, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is last year I had a company in Waukesha make me a desktop computer, Windows 7. I'm 75. I don't need Windows 8 or Windows 10 or whatever. I have Emisoft and Norton Antivirus on my computer, and I assume that I will have to update in this year whenever, because the computer was done in the summertime. You know, I constantly get pop-ups about other stuff too, and I'm wondering, you know, I hate to click on anything because the year before I got a root kit, a virus on my old computer, which was my husband's, and it just drove me absolutely nuts. And I also have a backup component that sits on top of the tower of my new computer that backs any stuff up. How much? Oh, and I'll tell you this: the computer is 8.8 gigabytes with 1 terabyte of hard drive. So I've got a lot of stuff that I can put on my computer. I'm just wondering how much the hard drive takes in, and what about, is it safe to update when they pop up? And I'll take my answer off.
Okay, so the pop-ups are you referring to are you need to update this particular
computer? Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's not an ad.
No. It's
okay. Okay.
I don't think it...
Okay, gotcha. All right. So... What do you think, Jesse?
The So if you, and just to look at the pop-up issue, so if you do receive a lot of pop-ups, especially if you're not doing anything on the computer, it's one sign, potentially, especially if it's a web browser, that you might have something doing some bad stuff in the background. It could be malware that is trying to get you to click on ad sites. Definitely looking at the content of those pop-up boxes is extremely important because it'll let you know if it's trying to scam you in some way. Generally, they're going to look for you to click on something for an ad. If it's an ad, it most likely means there might be something unfortunate going on with the computer.
Probably don't want to do that.
Now, as far as the pop-ups, now the update the workstation, if it is a genuine Windows update, which sometimes can be difficult to know, if you want to make sure it's the proper update for Windows itself, you can always go to the control panel and go to Windows or Microsoft Update. You can also go there from the start menu, but that is the built-in Windows Update feature, so you make sure you're getting the right one. However, there is some malware out there that will try to make it look like a genuine update program, and it's waiting for you to click on it, so it can do something even worse. Now, it's hard to know unless you actually see the message, and you can compare it to a computer that is looking for a similar update. So I would be cautious, but definitely take a look at the control panel in Windows Update, because that is going to be your official source of updates. If that's telling you there are no updates, and there is a pop-up stating that, hey, I have 10 updates for Windows I'd like to install, most likely it's a false update and it's bad software on the computer trying to get you to do some of its work for it.
Mm. So what about Norton?
And Norton is a fine antivirus program made by the Symantec company. They have kind of a few different lines, corporate and just consumer lines, products. Norton Antivirus, once again, no one program is always going to be 100% sufficient, but it is, as long as it's regularly updated and supported, it's a great thing to have on your computer. One item to always keep in mind is sometimes antivirus programs don't regularly scan your computer. Make sure you have a scheduled scan or do a full scan of your computer manually to ensure that you have no viruses. Sometimes running that scheduled scan is what it's going to take to actually alert you on something.
There you go. Thank you, Arlene. Yes, thanks a lot for calling. Robert in Milwaukee, it is your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I'd like to ask a question about Windows XP. I'm somebody that's still driving a 20-year-old car, and maybe XP is a 10-year-old operating system. I don't remember. But what kind of suggestions would you have for avoiding problems with virus and malware, especially since Microsoft doesn't support XP anymore? I'd like to continue using it. For example, I have QuickBooks Pro 2009, which will not even work on Windows 7, but it does work on Windows XP, and an older version of the Microsoft Office software. And I'll listen and take the answer off the air.
All right. So what do you think, Jesse?
In Windows XP, in this case, one of the biggest concerns is really you won't receive any security updates or support from Microsoft. So potentially, if there is some vulnerability to Windows, it may not be patched. And that's the largest risk you have, and it really depends on what the vulnerability does. Generally, they're not the greatest. However, if you want to protect yourself while having an older operating system, there are a lot of strategies you can use to protect yourself more. Always have an antivirus program. Hopefully, even though it's running on Windows XP, most likely it will still be supported by the antivirus manufacturer, because hopefully it runs on Windows 7 as well, so you can keep your computer protected. In addition, one of the largest issues when if you get some kind of malware infection or something else is most users run when logged into their computer as an administrator. This allows easy access when you visit a web page or something else for some software to do something bad. One way to protect yourself is to only log into your computer with what they call a restricted or just a normal user account and not an administrative account. You can create a separate administrative account in the control panel under users, but this way when you log in, if you accidentally click on something that would potentially do something bad, in most cases, it won't allow it to change your system, and you won't have to lose data or productivity. In addition, you could employ a little bit. There are some more complicated technologies out there that will actually scan software, and I don't think this is available. This might still be available on XP. It is from Microsoft, and it's called the Enhanced Mitigation Experience Toolkit. It's a very unique tool. It may be a little bit more complicated, but this was actually tested in some environments with workstations that were specifically out of date for quite some time with vulnerable software. And it actually allowed people to attack the computer and actually not be successful. This may be much more of a learning curve, but at the very least, I would make sure continue to back up your data, make sure you have up-to-date antivirus software, and only log in with a limited user account to decrease the likelihood that something bad could happen.
That's a good, really good tip. Robert, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Give you a chance to join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 as we visit with Jesse LeGru, who's a technical lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Information Technology, taking a look at your computer system and especially zeroing in a bit on security, online and computer system security. Join in again at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Sally in Madison, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. Good morning. I'm calling because we have only Mac computers here. I have a desktop, a tablet, and an iPhone. And my concern about security is that if somehow on one of them, they seem to be integrated in terms of being able to for instance, email I can update on any of the three.
Right.
So I'm concerned that if there's any sort of breach of security, let's say with my bank account or something, that it would transfer to all of them. And I wondered if there's a plus side or a minus side or anything I should or can do. Hmm. Or shouldn't I worry about it?
And that's a great question. And I tend to worry maybe too much, so I'm not telling you to, you know, definitely be very scared about the three Mac products. I think
I'm very
one,
scared.
I think one item that a lot of people feel is definitely, you know, Macs are more secure. They don't have as much right now of an attack profile, and people just aren't attacking them as much, which could be a portion of it. Now, with any kind of system that either synchronize data or that are using the same network, in theory, they have additional risk if one of the other devices in that area would get compromised in some way. Generally, I would just have the same kind of recommendations I even would for PCs. You know, run antivirus software. Keep an eye on any kind of pop-ups that you normally see when visiting a website, just to make sure that you do it when you do put in a username or password, or you put in sensitive information like a social security number. You're putting it in to the place you intend to, not to a place that could be malicious. Even in those cases, it may not affect the machines or, you know, cause an infection that would spread to the others. One of the biggest risks, I think, in this case is actually if you added a PC to the mix. So let's say if you have Let's say if you have Dropbox, for example, and you have a file that's infected. Now, your Mac may not know anything about it. You put it in there, but then it syncs to a PC. Well, the PC, it could actually infect. So there's just different variations. There are just different variations of, you know, kind of where that security happens. Now, if it was a Mac virus, let's say it would steal all your data and upload it to some website. If that existed, then that could be a potential risk where an infected file, if not found either by Dropbox, by whatever other service provider, by antivirus software, it would be a method in which that file could get onto all of the devices. Most likely you'd have to do this yourself in some cases, yeah, but it depends. Otherwise, I would just keep an eye open on, you know, the sites you're navigating to and any unusual activity. If you don't see any unusual activity, generally you're probably going to be okay.
Two more questions. How often should I turn the computer off as opposed to putting it to sleep? And how often should I change the password? Those occurred while I was talking to you. Thank you. I'll take the answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. Those are two, once again, great questions. As far as changing the password, this is a very difficult one, just because there's a lot that goes into making a password and making it secure. People have what they call a complexity requirement. So how long does the password have to be? Does it have to have a special character, a number, uppercase and lowercase characters? Usually the longer the password and the more random, the better. In theory, the more complicated password should be able to be changed less often rather than more often. A lot of groups will require you to change your password every 15 to 30 days, which seems extreme,
yeah,
but due to whatever requirements or regulations, they may have to. What I would try to do is make a very complicated password, or if you can't, think of an easier password that you can change more often. Either one should help you significantly, and there's a lot of password managers out there that can help you manage that information. Granted, if it's a password manager that requires you to be logged into your computer in the first place, maybe there is a trade-off there. If you can't get into it, then you're not going to be able to read the password to log into your computer. But they do, a lot of times, do work for smartphones. And you can have what they call multi-factor authentication, using different technologies to secure all of your information much, much more. But I would say less complicated passwords and change it more often. If you can have a really complicated password, 10 to 20 characters with all sorts of fancy bells and whistles, and randomized in theory, less often. It just depends on which one you can either memorize or manage in a different way.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It's somebody told me that she really likes thinking up phrases and then taking the first letter. Like, I really like going to UW Badger football games, and then just take the first letter of all those and add some numbers. And that's a pretty tough, that would be a pretty tough one to break, I would think.
Yep, and I haven't done the research on all the passwords. There's, you know, a whole field of study to this because it's a lot of math. But you type those kind of passwords in because they're really long. It's going to take a long time to guess when you think about it in theory. But if you put it into some password managers, they'll actually say, this is an insecure password. I'm not sure why you're using this. Other ones will say it's extremely strong. So it just depends on the tools you have available to kind of break into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's odd when you look at it. I've seen both ways. And it honestly, if you can think of a password that's difficult to crack, you use it rather than, you know, having 1234 or
yeah,
password access.
Your own name or something.
Yeah, that too. So, and there was a list of the 15 most commonly used passwords, I think, in 2014. And, you know, some of them are just default passwords. No one just reset it from the defaults. And just doing that itself is huge because people can get into your router at home because you have a wireless that has a default password. Your router has a default password, and all of a sudden they control everything in your area. And it doesn't take much. So always just changing a password to something that only you know is just very important. Most people, you know, a lot of people log into their computers without needing a password. It automatically logs in. You just click on your name and there you go. Because, you know, it's at your home. What are you, you know, necessarily worried about?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, passwords can save you a little bit.
Eric in Endeavor, it is your turn. Thanks, Eric, for calling.
Oh, you're welcome, Larry. And Larry's friend. Hey, my question is, in order to get a jump on everybody else, I got my first smartphone last week.
Okay.
And for my wife and myself, and do we need some kind of antivirus protection on the Android smartphone?
That's a great question, and I don't know if I have an answer. So with any kind of computing device, at a minimum, I'd say yes, just because there are bad files that can be out there. We obviously know there are vulnerabilities with Windows, Mac OS, there have been with Linux. And just based on what a lot of this technology is using, it's always a good idea, not only to protect the device you're using, but also to ensure that if you are sharing data with other devices, that you're saving those devices from possible infection as well. So I would, when taking, you know, the ultra security route, say, yes, it's a good idea. Now, if you're going to ask me, do I have antivirus on my Android phone? No, I don't. And it's just because it's something I didn't feel was necessary, but it's a good idea regardless.
Mm-hmm.
You do have a device that could be plugged into a network. You're using Wi-Fi or an LTE network. Do you necessarily trust all of the other devices on that Wi-Fi or LTE network? I would probably say no. So, you know, being more cautious is what I would lean towards. But, I mean, even looking at my own personal phone myself, you know, I'm not doing that. So I can say one thing, but in this case, I am not doing that. You always look at what is the risk versus, you know, the effort required. And in this case, for me, I didn't need to worry about it. But as cell phones do become more and more powerful, I mean, I have a quad-core phone. It's probably a good idea to think of, you know, this as a full-fledged computer and actually protect it as such, making sure that I do have a firewall and antivirus software. And after this conversation, in fact, I might actually install it. So.
There you go. Thank you, Eric, for calling. Appreciate it. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, currently a technical lead, team lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Information Technology. Join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk computers and computer security. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll get your questions on. Let's go to Jim in Whitefish Bay next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry and Jesse. I've got a 1980s era computer, and it takes 5 1/4 floppy disk, which nobody can read anymore. Is there any way of getting the data off of that hard drive?
And so, and you know, this can be a difficult problem, especially when you have older hardware. So let's assume that the floppy disks you have themselves are fine. If the data is fine and that physical media has no damage, short answer is yes. Now, the question is, where are you going to be able to go to get that data pulled off? There are a lot of different companies out there that just keep this technology laying around just so in these instances that you can get the data back. Even in our shop when we did repair, we had one sitting on the shelf, sitting there, just in case. Most likely, if you go to any of the computer repair locations in your area, you might be able to find one. I was trying to take a look online to see if they do have a reader you could just buy online. In this case, it may not be worth the cost, but you probably can get, because you can get them for the smaller floppy drives, where you can actually have a USB power drive. You might be able to do that for the larger 5 1/4 inch disks as well. But somebody's got one. You just have to find who that person is or that company is.
Yep.
I've been trying for 3 years and I can't find anybody.
Oh, my goodness.
Hmm.
That
some
surprises
people say
me.
That, some people say that they've got a, equipment that'll do the 3.5, but not the 5.25, not the original floppy.
Do you have a newer computer right now that you know has you know Windows XP 7 or 8 on it?
Yes.
And I don't have an answer off the top of my head, but I can see if I can find an option for you and get back to you. Because right now I know they do have the 3.5. I'm not sure about the 5.25, but most likely there's an option somewhere. And I'll see if I can find it, and we can post that later.
Okay, Judith can maybe take your number. If you want to hold on, we'll put you on hold.
Okay.
Jim, and get your number, and Jesse can get back to you. Let's do that. And then turn to Jim in Decorah, Iowa. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'm a Mac guy, a Mac Mini with 10.8 operating system. I'm just wondering, you hear about PC and Mac. Been a Mac guy all along. What is the pluses and minuses of both the PC over the Mac or the Mac over the PC? Is one more secure? Is one a better platform? I'm just curious. I'll take my answer off the air. I'm blowing
okay.
Call. Thanks.
Please. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
And, I mean, it's, everybody always likes the Apple commercials with, you know, PC and Apple never gets viruses, and it's the most secure operating system ever. Granted, it's based on a system that has had viruses before PC ever existed. Now, really, which one is better? I couldn't really give a straight answer. It always depends on what you need to use the device for. I use Macs, I use PCs, I use Linux. Depending on what I need to use it for kind of tells me which one is better. Now, there are more flexibilities in different areas, whether you have Windows or Mac OS. Right now, the way it looks, at least just due to infections and issues that happen on a security level, Mac OS would seem to be the more secure option, but it doesn't mean that it's without any flaws. There were vulnerabilities, for example, with SSL that actually affected more Mac OS machines than it did PCs, because by default, there are remote options that you just don't have for PCs, but they affect the Macs in a different way. So both of these are still using differing technologies. That leads to differing vulnerabilities. It really just depends. Always go by what you need to do. Even just listing, these are the items I need to do. These are the programs I need to use. You might be able to find alternatives for Mac OS or Windows. But if you need a program, there's only one program that can do it, and it only runs on a Mac or it only runs on a PC, well, in this case, it's what you need. Otherwise, I use both interchangeably. I can do what I need to do, and that's really all that matters to me. As far as security, I still have antivirus firewalls and everything else and backups on both. So I secure both in a similar manner, just in case.
There we go. And we'll take some more calls. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call as we visit with Jesse LeGru of the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at computers and computer security with Jesse LeGru of the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. We have, Jesse, you've had some information on the earlier caller who wondered about disks, right?
Yeah, so I found one interesting little website. I always like to do some research behind just to make sure, you know, the website's good and everything. This is www.floppydisk.com. FloppyDisk.com. They actually do transfer service for both 3.5 and 5.25 inch disks. You can mail them the disks, and they will transfer the data to a flash drive that you can simply plug in your computer and read or back up. They'll also do it to an optical media such as a DVD or CD, but it appears that they will actually transfer this data for you. And there's a price per disk and a shipping fee, but it's just one option that I was able to find right away, and I'm sure there's others out there, both services that will do this, either locally or remotely, but also even getting one of those pieces of hardware so you can plug it into your newer computer.
And the price on that was like $5, wasn't it, a disk or something?
Yep, it was $5 a disk. They have a kind of a steep shipping charge at $10, but if you decide to ship them 100 disks, it's still $10.
So total.
So yeah. it becomes cheaper
the
overall.
More they send, yeah.
Yep.
So very good help there. Let's go to Fred in Milwaukee next. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Good morning. I have Windows. Once a week or maybe slightly longer, I get a thing on the screen that says I need a Java update, and also not the same day, I'll get one that says I need a Apple iCloud update, and I don't have Apple iCloud or have never bet on either one of them. Is this just something I'm going to always have coming up?
And Fred, was this for a Windows computer?
No, somebody got my email address or however they send it. I don't know.
Okay.
No.
For the Java updates, normally those will be prompted from the Java program itself. It usually looks like a little orangish icon in the lower right-hand corner. You might get it from your web browser as well. Generally, it's a good idea to run those updates when you do get them, just because Java and JavaScript are used a lot out in the world as far as websites and just general programs that you might run on your computer, which they tend to have vulnerabilities quite often. So making sure you're at the latest version is just going to keep you protected. As far as Apple iCloud, if it was a Macintosh computer, these are, you know, pop-ups you're going to get about updates from the App Store or from the system itself, just depending on the version of the operating system. If it's on Windows, that might come with iTunes. And usually with any kind of software update, as long as you have that software on your computer, it's just a good idea to update it for security reasons, because there might be some security benefits, but there also might be functionality benefits. So maybe something's not working quite right, you update the software and it's going to fix some other problems for you. But if these are valid update notifications that you're getting from your desktop computer, I would recommend installing them if you do use those software applications. But if the update notifications are quite annoying, and let's say you never need to use Java, I would actually recommend uninstalling it if you can. Within Windows, if you go to Programs and Features, once again, this depends on your version of Windows, you'll be able to remove that software. So the more software you have on your computer, in theory, the more vulnerabilities that could crop up on the system, just because you have all those software packages to worry about. But in general, when I get pop-ups, I just install them. If you use Windows, I like a program called Ninite or Ninite, however you'd like to pronounce it, N-I-N-I-T-E. You can Google that. But it allows you to download a little installer that will actually update or from scratch install a large variety of software packages that do include iTunes and that do include Java. It's just one program you can run every week. If it is installed and out of date, it will update it. If it is already up to date, it will just leave it alone. So it's a very good, fast way to do it, and it's for free.
All right. There we go. And thanks again for calling. Appreciate the call. Margie in Milwaukee, we turn to you next. Hi, Marge.
Hi there. 2 years ago, I moved and put my Dell computer tower into temporary storage, which turned out to be 2 years. And I have it now. I've been using my laptop until then. I don't remember the password to get in. Is there any way I can find somebody that can get into it for me?
That's a That's a good question. Actually, a lot of people, I think, when they get to that point where you don't know a password, you're almost stuck, which is not the case. Do you know what version of Windows, whether it's Windows 7, XP?
I think it was XP.
Okay. And I'm trying to... So there's a lot of different password utilities you can use. You can actually just Google, you know, Windows XP password reset. And
really?
What you can do is they have some bootable disks that you can create a CD or a DVD. You boot your computer up with it. And some of them are really clunky. They're command line only. They're really simple to use, but they look complicated. That allows you to clear out the password and log into the computer itself. But one other item, you know, it depends. Do you know if you planned on actually using your computer, or did you just want to get some of the data off of it?
I just want to get the data off of it.
And
specifically picture files and things.
Okay. One other thing I might recommend, these are fairly inexpensive, and you could probably even have a technician somewhere at, you know, a variety of different computer stores do this for you. Even if you don't know the password, most likely you can access the data fine from a different computer. One way to do this is actually taking the hard drive in your desktop and putting it into an external hard drive enclosure. It basically just turns your old desktop into an external hard drive. You plug it into your laptop or whatever desktop you have. You can read your files, put them wherever you want, and you just need to keep that hard drive. You can get rid of the computer.
Okay, I'm probably going to have to listen to this radio show tonight again to catch what you just said, because that sounds creepy to me. I have an external hard drive. You're saying I can connect it to my computer?
This would basically right now, when you look at your computer itself, you have a keyboard, you have a mouse, you have a monitor plugged into it, and that's how most people use their computers on a day-to-day basis. Inside your computer, there's just one device that actually holds all of your data. What this would do is basically allowing you to kind of plug that little device directly into your computer, just like you would with the external hard drive you have now. So it's basically, it would be giving you another external hard drive, but it would be one that actually has all your data on it.
And I don't need a password to get in.
Correct.
To it that way.
You just open the... Just to be specific, she opens it up, right?
Yep, she would... open up, so once you had this plugged into your laptop or desktop, you would open it just like you would any flash drive or any other external hard drive. Mm-hmm. If you're using Windows 7, you would go to My Computer. You would see a new little drive letter, you know, D, E, F. You would open it up, and it would have the directory of data that you would otherwise see on your old computer. So it might have a Documents and Settings folder, and that's most likely the place where all your data is. And you can navigate through that just like it was on your own computer. But then you don't need the password, and it's something you could store long-term if you needed to for backup or easy access if you needed.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that I access inside, like if I take the side of the tower off?
Yes.
The side of my tower is off.
All right.
Because we've been trying to figure this out already. So
if you look at it, what should she see?
So in this depend. How old was the computer?
It might be 10 years old.
Okay. Most likely, what you're going to find, the hard drive is going to have two cables plugged into it. One is going to be a white cable with, I think, or a white end plugged into one side of it, which usually has four pins. That's for power. And then on the other side is going to be a ribbon cable.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard drive is, they normally call them 3.5-inch hard drives. They are, I'm trying to think the size of...
What does it look like? Yeah, kind of deck of cards...
If you stacked maybe three decks of cards together, that'd be about the size.
Like sideways, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that. If I Google like the inside of the computer, would it show me like a diagram of it?
Definitely.
Because I only see...
Yeah.
I only see one little white cord, and it's kind of in twisted in a whole braid of cords.
Yeah.
And that might actually be the cable itself. A lot of the computers, especially with the older cabling, it was much more jumbled in there. Normally the cable is it's one large ribbon cable that's white. There might be one colored cable on the very end, which will normally be red, but those would be plugged into CD drives, hard drives, and other devices. And if you do Google just taking out a hard drive, you should be able to easily find it. And if you actually, I would even recommend, so whatever the model of Dell you have, it's normally on the top or on the back, Google that.
Yeah, I've got it here.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would Google that and take out hard drive. You might actually find the exact pictures for your computer to give you a step-by-step instruction. And then as far as putting it into one of these adapters, which they would just call, and once this, it's just called a hard drive enclosure. So basically you're just putting this into a little box. You'll be able to, I mean, if you can get that out, it's going to be easy enough for you to install that in one of these enclosures and just plug it into your laptop.
Yeah.
I'm excited. This sounds doable. Okay.
Yeah, that was a very good description, and I think a lot of people will benefit from that, because as often on the show it comes up, you know, about taking that hard drive out, and I'm trying to remember if we ever really described, I don't think we ever did, how to get in there, and just going online... That's perfect advice, I think. Yeah, I really do. And really glad to have Jesse LeGru with us, currently a tech lead with the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology. With us until 12:30 today, we'll take a quick look at the news, weather, and then we'll be back with him. So you stay with us. Great to have you visiting in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, sometimes technology gets a bad rap. You know, like most things, it works well. When it works well, we don't really take note of it. It's only when it doesn't work well that we really take a lot of note of it. And we're dealing with some of those kinds of issues today with our guest, Jesse LeGru, technical team lead within the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. He focuses on desktop and laptop security projects. On campus, he can be found consulting on IT projects, help staff and faculty resolve computer problems and repair infected computers sometimes as well. Jesse, thanks again for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We have callers online, a lot of emails and Facebook questions as well. You can join in by phone at 1-800-642-1234. We'll take a phone call and then maybe some questions off Facebook. Gary and Shano is up next. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
That Robo thing, I paid the $10. There's no way that it'll do the installing because it says do this, and I tried it again. And it says, then bring this icon up, click it. Well, I never, ever, ever on any way found any kind of an icon. And believe me, I know a lot of ways to search. And then it says, click help on there, and then click activate. Well, I've looked every place on anything I can find on my toolbars or anything trying to find a help. I've never found one.
All right.
What was the software title that you were trying to install?
It's actually called...
Hello?
Yes. Who's this?
You're on the air, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I'm on the air. Great.
And you've been on the air for the last minute or so.
No, I'm sorry.
So you have... You bought some software?
First of all, let me preface this, that I've had a home computer starting with a Trash 80 up to now when I have like three of them on my network.
Okay.
For at least 30-some years. So
okay.
I've had computers longer maybe than your guest there. But recently I've downloaded a couple of software packages. One was I won't use the names, but one's a package I've used a lot, And they finally harassed me into ordering a thing that tones up your computer, you know, the usual. Mm-hmm. They go through and tell you all the things that's wrong with it, and they'll fix all those things up.
Okay.
And I did. And I ran everything I knew to install it, and I never have been able to find it installed. I can't tell if I got it, and there's... And my main thing is, recently, in the last couple years, they make it so there is no way possible that you can contact them for support. And I wondered if your person there knew any way...
To get to them?
Anything or any trick so that you could get any kind of support to help you with things. And what? Then today I did a second package, and exactly the same thing happened.
So, do we need, it probably help to know the name of the company. You don't want to give the name
one,
of the company.
One of them was AVG. AVG,
okay.
And I've used it for years and recommended it to people, and it was fine. This happens to be the AVG PC tune-up.
Okay.
And what my solution was finally just to give up, and I got my money refunded. The second one is a very nice program, and I've seen it used. My broker uses it. I'd like to use it. It keeps track of all your passwords. I believe you talked about that.
Yeah.
And it's called RoboForm. So I decided I used the temporary one that gets you to try it out, and I tried it, liked it, downloaded for a nominal amount of money the app, both for a Windows machine and for a tablet.
Yeah.
And then this is a complete install to do these steps. I've copied... That I know I'm following the instructions that they send me. There's no way I can find anything that indicates that I have that program
installed. Okay. So what do you think, Jesse?
Gary, what program did you use to download it? I'm assuming you used a web browser of some sort.
Yeah. Now, there's a thing I'm kind of a little... I've always... For the last, I don't know how many years, so let's say 15 years or so, I've always used Firefox. I've never used
anything
Explorer
else
or Windows. But now I'm running on Chrome because by running Chrome on my Windows machine, it makes it a lot easier to use it on the cloud and run with my smartphone and with my tablet.
Okay.
And with Chrome, and unfortunately I don't have it in front of me right now, both Chrome and Firefox have an option to view both your existing and previous downloads. Normally it stores it in the downloads folder of your user account. Now, if it did store it in a very unusual place for some reason, it would still show up in that list. And I don't know exactly off the top of my head what the menu is, but you can view the previous downloads for Chrome, and hopefully you're going to see it just sitting there for you.
If it's not there, it's not installed, is basically it. So you need to go back to that and take a look, Gary, and see if it's there. And if it's not there, what does he do if it's not there?
The only other thing I might recommend is possibly using a different browser to download it. It may give you better results. And it's uncertain, you know, whether Chrome itself is having an issue. Maybe it's downloading it, not putting it in the proper place, or it's getting deleted. In some of these cases, too, since you are downloading a security product, there are times when other security products actually will flag a security product as a virus and delete them before you even know it. disabling antivirus software just in case. Even though we don't like to do it, it might be a good thing to try before downloading it again. But I would check that downloads folder or use a different browser or even a different computer. And then normally you should be able to use a different method like a flash drive or a CD to bring it from that computer to your computer.
There you go. Good luck, Gary. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have lots of online questions here. One from Laura from Grand Marsh. She gets calls, phone calls from people saying they're from Microsoft and they want her to turn on her computer and let them control it. They say has a virus and they need access, and that isn't, that just does not happen.
No, Microsoft will never call you. It can be difficult enough to just call Microsoft to get technical support directly. They will definitely not call you. This is a very popular scam. I've actually had it happen to me twice in about a 1 to 2 month period.
Wow.
Whenever you get a company to call you, it's always good to have a verifiable phone number that you might have on a bill or something else to even call you back, or you can call them back. In this case, Microsoft will not call you. It is a definite scam. There's probably no such thing in this case. And I would assume as a do not call list, they really, you know, are in it to make the money and
right.
Steal information from your computer. So definitely make sure that you can get some verifiable information from them just to save yourself from any kind of, you know, nefarious deeds. In this case, I know it's a scam, but another nice thing to do whenever these kind of scams come through, whether it's the email, phone, I actually, you know, you can Google a phone number, you can Google an email address you get, or you can Google the message. And many times you'll find out, hey, this was on Consumer Reports, this was on something else. A lot of people had this issue, and you can actually find out what the history is about it and that you should really just steer clear of it.
Email. By the way, you can join in if you have a question. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Jennifer emailed and said, I'd like to find something that would allow me to use my iPhone to record oral stories told by my dad and either save them in a document form or automatically convert to text to save for future use. I've heard about GetDragon. Thoughts or advice on that? I've seen quite a few apps. Some seem good. We're an all Mac family, so we need Mac and iPhone friendly. Also, I'd like to be able to do it away from home, so using something that doesn't respond.
And this is partially out of what I normally do, but the Dragon Naturally Speaking or Get Dragon. The software is very commonly used for a lot of this to transcribe audio to text. The downside with software, especially you know ones that need to do this kind of translation, it usually requires training. So in this case, if the audio was to be recorded in somebody else's voice, you would need that person to actually train the software so it could convert to text.
Doesn't she already on iPhones, can't you at least record?
Yep, you can definitely record any of the audio with the built-in recorder, and I'm certain there are free applications even on the App Store. Beyond that, correct. As far as the translation, it is going to be tricky. It's most likely going to be easier to simply transcribe it after the fact manually, just because it will take additional training, and even then it may not be 100% translation. You can always use the built-in recorder. It should synchronize with iTunes, and after that you should also be able to bring it into other programs if needed.
And how would you find the recording device on the iPhone?
On the iPhone, I think...
Isn't it...
I'm trying to
remember the name of it now.
And actually, now that... And of course, I turned my iPhone off, so...
We can whip out our iPhones. Here, I'll let you take a look.
And, yeah, and this will probably depend on the version of iPhone that you have. Let's see here.
may or may not be there.
And this should be a built-in application. And I'm sure somebody else is out there, you know, screaming at the top of their lungs. It's really here.
It's like a steno or something.
Yeah, and the notes function, I think, only has typing but not recording.
It's there somewhere, I think. But
it's got to be somewhere in here. I know I have used it before, and I can't recall whether I did download it separately. But as far as just a free option, it is here. There is voice memos. Okay, so that's something. Voice memos.
Voice memos, I think, is what...
Yeah. In this case, it was in the utilities folder. Maybe different based on the version.
Yeah.
That's one free application. You can go to the App Store and get a lot of others. The transcription piece really will be tricky just because that software is usually more expensive and it does require training. Depending on how much of it you have to do, though, it may be worth it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I might just recommend manually transcribing it.
In an email from Nate, I reinstalled iOS 10.9 on a MacBook Pro and forgot to make a backup before doing so. How do I get the data back from before I rebuilt the laptop?
So the there's a backup. And this, if there's a backup using Time Machine or a different application, you can actually navigate that backup without fully restoring the computer. So you can pull data off that way. Or you can restore the computer. Now, if there is no backup and the only copy of any of your data was on that workstation, the first thing I'd recommend, don't use it anymore, just because the more you use a computer after you've reformatted it, the more likely it's going to overwrite a lot of the data that was sitting there. It's kind of like putting writing with a pencil on a piece of paper and you scratch it once with an eraser. The more you scratch, the less you're going to be able to see it. So stop using it. Actually take it to a data recovery facility that can help restore that data. Most likely it's going to require a little bit more sophisticated forensics in order to attempt to get it back. Otherwise, in this case, I would just say restore from backup. But if you have reformatted it recently, just shut it down, have a forensics company. They can usually clone the drive so you can still use the computer, and then they can do data recovery techniques on that original drive.
And we got a note from Peter Green for virus protection. AVG makes a popular free program for Android phones. I have it on my new Samsung Galaxy S5. So from AVG, you can get a free program for virus protection for your phone.
That's
very cool. Thanks, Pete. Barbara in Freeport, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a problem. My screen, I can't get all the way to the right to the scroll bar.
Hmm.
And... I think a lot of people have had this problem before. In this case, I'm guessing the screen is probably not fully maximized, meaning it's filling the entire screen. Usually on the very top, which is right above where you might see the file menu or the edit menu, it'll have that main program bar. If you double-click on that, and I should probably ask, is this a PC?
It's a PC.
Okay. Double-click on that bar where it says Chrome. Hopefully that will put it into full screen mode, and you're going to see that right-hand scroll bar. It should fill the entire screen, though, at that point.
Okay.
All right.
Everything. I'll try that. Thank you.
That'll work.
Yeah, otherwise, one thing you can do, as long as you can find a corner of the screen, so let's say it's in the upper left-hand corner, grab it, move it towards the lower right to make it as small as possible, and then just move the entire box to the left until you can find it. It's somewhere.
It is frustrating, though, when it happens.
Yep, I've had it where, you have four screens, and the scroll bars, it's two screens to the right. They don't exist, but I need to get it back. And another weird way to do it is go to Task Manager. You can highlight the program, click on Move, and then use the arrows on your keyboard to move it left, right, up, and down.
Oh.
And then you can kind of move it to the off the screen on the left-hand side, but you can get to the scroll bar. And
yeah.
It allows you to resize it, but that can be a pain.
It can be indeed. We had a Facebook comment from Patricia, who uses Scrabble files to select random letters and numbers for passwords. She keeps track in a small address book. I like that. That's using some using your bean, your noggin. Of course, then you really you're not going to remember those.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely difficult when you have really strong passwords, but that's, you know, the whole reason to have some kind of password manager, and whatever works for you, you know, works.
Yep, absolutely. Diane in Lake Mills. Hi.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have a Windows PC, and I have Norton Software Security on it. And every time I open the computer, the Norton software is telling me that that adware.hotbot is trying to get into my computer, and so I should restart it, or, you know, fix it and restart it. But it's every single time I open it up. I just want to get rid of that thing. I've gone to Norton, and they had a little program that said would get rid of it, but it hasn't.
Okay.
And, the downside with a lot of these malware programs is they can sometimes be difficult to remove because they're running on the system. And it sounds like you've already done a lot of the items that you would need to do. One thing I would recommend, which is a little bit more advanced, when restarting your computer, if you hit the edit F8 key, and what I normally do to just make sure I hit it the right time, it's very, very well timed before the Windows splash screen appears, it will give you an option to go to safe mode. Yeah. Within safe mode, it has a limited amount of programs that can run, and most likely in those cases, this adware.hotbot is not running. Then I would run the Norton program to scan it and remove it. Hopefully after that, when you restart again, it's going to be completely gone. Otherwise, there are some other programs out there like Malwarebytes that might have better options. Some of these programs are just better tailored to removing different things. First, I would just try reboot, hit the F8 key. You might miss it a couple times, and it might be a little bit frustrating.
Okay.
But just
keep at it.
Just keep at it. If anything, as soon as that computer turns on, you see right before the Windows screen, just keep on tapping the button, and eventually it's going to get there, maybe the first time, maybe the 10th time. I've had it happen many more times than that. But you'll get there. You'll get to safe mode. You'll be able to run the scan, and hopefully it's going to clean that up for you.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, somebody called in earlier and wondered, couldn't see their downloads or was looking for downloads. And we had a Facebook comment from James who says, you know, for downloads, go to hit the control button and at the same time, J, the letter J, control J shows the downloads. Well, I've never done that.
Excellent.
I've never tried that. I've got to write it down, of course, or I'll forget it. But I want to try that just to make sure that it actually works. But, you know, we always have, almost always, if we get stumped or if whoever gets stumped on whatever topic, I don't care what it is, computers or your lawn, there's somebody that comes in and has some useful advice to share. And, Jesse, you had useful advice right for a whole 90 minutes here. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. Hope we can do this again.
I hope so, too.
Appreciate it very much. Jesse LeGrew is currently a tech team lead within the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology. And we'll get him back and do it again. Tomorrow, Ken Adams and John Freiberger share some information on thermal turtles. What do you think about that? Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.